Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good evening, listeners, and you've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show on the Seiken Network right here on Blog Talk Radio. This is Restita De Jesus, and I'm here with my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. How's it going tonight, Bob?
It's going great. I'm sitting here with my Starbucks. I'm really excited about this show. We've got some good things happening. I want to talk a little bit about some things happening up where you are. And we're going to have a great show tonight and with a special guest host.
Yeah, we are joined by John Morton, a martial arts instructor on the East Coast. And he's joining me and Bob as a co-host because he won this one-night stint by being the first trivia question answerer. Is that a word? Answerer?
It is now.
It is now. I just made it a word, dang it. He was the first person to submit the correct answer for last week's trivia question, which was, if I remember correctly, what is the longest word that can be typed entirely by the left hand? And the correct answer was, John, what was it?
I believe it was stewardesses, wasn't it?
Yay! That's right. That's right. And even though
it's
call
a miracle
in with it. Yeah.
Because I only typed with like two fingers, so the fact that I figured that out is a complete miracle. So.
Well, you typed it with just that one left finger then, right? Well, welcome aboard, John. We're happy to have you join us as a guest co-host. Oh, you're welcome. So for our listeners, we've got a fun show tonight. It's our Rant, Rave, and Rap show. This is the first of periodic Rant, Rave, and Rap shows that we'll be doing. Me and Sifu Bob are thinking of maybe having this show maybe once every 2 months. So, you know, periodically, not too often. And this is the listeners' opportunity to call in and talk about anything. This is an open forum. You can talk about martial arts, fitness, health, books, news. You can rant about something, rave about something, send shout-outs or compliments to people, tell us about any of your upcoming events or seminars or workshops, anything. Well, except for politics and religion. Let's keep that out of this because I don't want to have to hang up on anybody.
Yeah, you do have that magic button to hang up on people.
I've got that magic button. I do. But
even me, I'm a little worried tonight.
you've been good so far.
So far.
So far.
It's so early.
Well, before we get to the ranting and raving and news bits and announcements and trivia questions, I kind of want to – let's talk to John a little bit. John, can you just give us a brief overview about your martial arts background so our listeners can know about our guest co-host tonight?
Sure, absolutely. I've been doing martial arts about 25 years. I started out in Taekwondo, like pretty much everybody in the world, I think. it was one of the three-quarter. And from there, I mean, I was never really flexible. I was never really, you know, that necessarily good at it, but I did get to a secondary black belt. But while I was doing Taekwondo, I got into Hapkido, and I really kind of found that the joint locks and the pressure points and that kind of stuff was really kind of my forte, really where I wanted to be. From there, I kind of expanded, and I started working with small circle jiu-jitsu, Professor Wally J's style, which is a phenomenal style of joint locking. It just brought a whole new level of martial arts understanding to what I was doing. At the same time, I have a lot of friends and people in the martial arts that I train with and hang with, so I started adding a lot of the Filipino-type flavor and entries and energy flow drills and JKD trapping and that kind of stuff. But really one of the biggest things that kind of changed how I do the martial arts is I started working with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Stephen Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give a shameless plug here. He has a book out called The Book of Martial Power. And he, you know, through his years of experience and I started working together, And he just really showed me a lot of principles and concepts that I'd never even seen before. And it's really made what we do as far as our joint locking. I'm a locker. Let's just be, you know, put it right out there. I'm a joint locker.
Mm-hmm.
But it really brought our joint locks to a whole different stratosphere. So I've had a bit of background. You know, I've done some kapop with Avi Nardia, and I've done some training with some other people. And, you know, I try to do as much as I can. That being said, my mantra tends to be there's a big difference between 20 years of experience and 1 year of experience 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the years I've been in the martial arts, I've just tried to learn and get better at what I do and constantly improve and try to add a depth to it rather than go out and just learn a bunch of haphazard techniques and concepts. So, but
mm-hmm.
It's good. It works for us. We do a lot of law enforcement and military training because we are, you know, joint locking, takedown and control specialists. But, you know, my experience kind of expands a little beyond that. So we'll have some fun with that.
Very cool. Now, you have a school also. Where is that located?
We do. Our school is in Albany, New York. It's upstate New York. We call it the Modern Self-Defense Academy. I only opened it a couple of years ago, opened about 3 years ago. For years, I trained in other schools and taught at military bases, that kind of stuff. And about 3 years ago, we decided, let's get out there. Let's show our stuff to the world. So we're primarily adult-oriented. We really don't do the children's classes and that kind of thing based on the nature of the techniques that we do. A ton of respect for the people that do. It's not my forte and my direction. It's a smaller, more intimate, you know, training facility rather than a big big promotional thing. But we do
mm-hmm.
well, and I think we turn out some great martial artists.
Yeah, like everyone that I know that has really great students coming out of their gyms are usually the small business type of, you know, dojos, like maybe 2,000 square feet or, you know,
right.
if that, as opposed to, you know, like the big, you know, 10,000 foot, you know, square foot facilities. And although it would be great to have one, I wouldn't mind a big old huge dojo like that. You know, it's just not for me, you know, to run a big thing like that. I prefer the small dojo type of thing also, or the
not
backyard or the garage.
Exactly. Not for me. I mean, I could bring out a point that might bring one of our rants and raisins. And I kind of think if you get that big, you do mm-hmm. tend to lose a little bit of intimacy with your students and a little bit of, you know, that close-handed type training.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least in my experience. I'm sure there's some phenomenal huge schools out there that do really well. In fact, I know of one or two in this area that are great. Just for what I do and what I teach, I don't think it would be conducive to having, you know, 500 students. I think it's
yeah.
a challenge.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And of course, if there are any other, if there are any listeners out there that want to call in and you have like a huge dojo, call and let us know how that works, because I want to know.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
I'm not averse to having 200 students. I just don't have 200 students. You know,
yeah. I'm not averse to having 200 to 500 students. It's just that, you know, I guess my business mind isn't quite up to, you know, like running an empire type of thing, you know,
right.
or doing what's that called, franchising or anything.
Right.
So
right.
that's pretty cool. All righty, well, that's really cool. So, before I forget, just so our listeners can maybe come visit your academy. Does your academy have a website?
Absolutely. It's www.modernselfdefenseacademy.com.
Okay.
Or you can just Google me, John Border. That's Border. And
okay.
It's the first thing that pops up, and you can go to our website. Another thing is if they want to Facebook me, I'm huge on Facebook. In fact, I threw a notice out to my Facebook page, which has almost 5,000 martial artists on it, about the show tonight. So hopefully that'll generate a little exposure for you guys too.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice. Thank you, John.
Nice. Well, I guess between, like, the three of us, there's, like, 15, 5,000, yeah, 15,000
yeah.
people. They better start calling in. And
did you really just do that? 15
What's
times,
that?
5 times 3 is 15.
Yeah.
Did you really just do that?
I just really, do
like,
that.
The only Asian in the world that still needs a calculator.
Yeah. All right. Well, look at this. We've got a caller. Let's go ahead and take the caller before we get into our health news and stuff like that. So we got a caller from area code 909. First three numbers 861. Hi 909. What can we do for you?
Hey, what's up? I just got on the phone. Hey Bob, this is Derek, Greg Woodruff's cousin.
Derek, my brother. How are you, man?
All right. What's happening, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. I understand your cousin's finally landed from Cambodia yesterday.
Yeah. He's in town and he sounds good. He sounds ready to do some business. So I'm hoping he's gonna be out here in Cali pretty soon so we can handle that.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, we missed him. We weren't expecting him back for another like year and a half or something like that.
Yeah, he's on his journey. He's out there searching just like the rest of us. So you know,
mm-hmm.
but I'm glad he's back. You know,
yeah.
I definitely am looking forward to picking his brain and using his talents and his gifts so we can do business.
For real? Now is
he
back for good or is he going back in another couple months or how's that working?
Who knows? Probably a little bit of both. Probably true, but I think he's back and he's going to be ready to really get going with his art and with what he wants to do. So I think it was good that he was gone for the little while that he was gone, but I think he's coming back to basically get things going again and make things right.
Sweet.
Yeah,
beautiful.
For sure. So I didn't really get a chance to get in on what you guys were talking about before I called. You know, I wasn't calling just to talk about Greg, but I definitely wanted to. I saw that you guys were talking about ranting and raving, and you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mhm. Yeah, you got anything to rant or rave about?
I don't know. You know, there's so many things. I don't want to start off on talking about more than what you guys were willing to get into. You know, but
let's just start
it's
with
an
one
open
rant
show,
or...
Derek. Whatever you want,
yeah, it's
man.
An open show. Yep.
Okay. Right on. Well, let me think. I guess I would have to say I think the thing that I see, and it's not even so much in the martial arts, but I think in society in general, especially in the younger generation, I see a understanding of trying to take a shortcut to get to where they want to go. I don't see, and I guess basically what I'm saying is I don't see anybody willing to work or train to get to where they want to be. I see everybody looking for short ways to maybe have the perception that they've done the training and done the work,
mm-hmm.
but would rather have the perception be that they've done the work, but they haven't actually done the work.
And Derek, I agree to that.
You know, and
yeah,
I think I see that when I you know as I look to try to find people because I work in the security industry. As Bob and some people may know that are listening, but as I try to find people that would work in the security industry, I run in more and more with people that want to shove some certification in my face or talk to me about this or talk to me about that, but
mm-hmm.
not talk about the application of what you know why we train, why we do what we do, and why this has to be part of what you are and what your lifestyle is, you know.
Absolutely.
I think too many times that, you know there's people out there that are they look to the martial arts and they look to different trainings as a way to shortcut. And I guess what I'm just trying to say is I wish people would more understand that there is no shortcuts. You know, there's only the work and there's only the passion to want to get to where you want to go. And the rest of it is if it's not coming from that place is not going to help you, it's going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Derek. I think what we're dealing with here is in this country, I think especially in this country, we've come up with a psychology of instant gratification.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can pick up a cell phone and make a call from anywhere in the world. We You know, we can, you know, microwave our dinners. And so working 20 years to get to the coveted black belt just doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
You made a great point of getting where you want to get to. But I think there's another question. What do they want to get to? Do they just want a black belt around their waist? Because
right.
you can buy one of those online.
Right.
Or do you really want to master something and become good at something? You know what I mean?
Right.
And you just don't see that anymore for the most part. I'm sure there's plenty of great quality schools out there. But I do have to say that the rule is, like you said, they want to shortcut it and they want to fast track it. And they have a black belt around their waist, so they're thrilled. And then I dare say that many black belts that I know couldn't defend themselves if they had to, or fight their way out of a wet paper bag at this
right.
point. And that's very disheartening.
It is. And for me, because my background and Bob knows a little bit about how I came. I kind of came up informally, but I trained with some great people. So my whole experience has always been, if I see somebody that is offering something that I think I can learn from, I'm going to be respectfully open to anything and everything, and looking forward to the opportunity to learn and train with that person. But too many times I go into dojos my whole thing is in my business, in my career, I'm not really afraid of anybody. So as far as martial arts and technique, I'm sure what you have works and what you know works. But at the end of the day, I really want to train not to disprove what you're saying, but to add to what I'm doing. And too many times there's instructors that don't have that mentality to understand that it's just tough to train when people don't have the, when people that are supposed to be training don't have the right mentality in terms of giving their art or what they have to give in an open and positive way, and it becomes a confrontation to which I usually will walk away from. I'm not there to challenge you, so I'm not, if you took it as a challenge, that just shows where you're at. I'm not trying to challenge you. I'm just trying to learn. And and I think too many times that there's so much of wanting to guard what they believe to be right, and nobody wants to actually exercise that muscle, if you will, of what you feel is right. I think that there has to be some integrity in the trainers, so that the people that want to be trained can get the training, can get what you have to give. Otherwise, why teach it anyway? Why do it if you're not willing to express it in an open and confident way? Like there's something that you have to hide. And I think, I guess my thing is, when I've gone to places with trainers that have a good name and a reputation on who they are and what they train, but then when it comes time to maybe they find somebody that may physically be at their level or more, instead of wanting to really go into the situation as to what my art is and what the truth and the reality of what I'm trying to do is, then they start trying to back away and they get into a defensive posture instead of an open posture.
Right. No one wants to think outside their own box, basically.
Right, exactly. Nobody.
Yeah.
If you come with something, and when I was younger, I used to get a kick out of trying to put instructors and people in certain circumstances to kind of try to see where they were at.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I get older, I'm not so much interested in that. But like I say, Bob knows my experience in training with Greg and with Master Wooldridge and the different people that I've trained with, put me in a position where I can sense it and I can see it. Now you may have something to give me, and I want to get it from you. But if you're not willing to get past the fact that you don't feel you feel threatened, then there's nothing really that you can give,
right?
And, you have to be honest and open about what you feel you have to give. And if you don't have, you feel you have, and I think a lot of times the teachers and the instructors, they become so patterned in after what they have been trained is right. And you know, so but my whole perspective is always, I'm always trying to learn from a perspective of what I could really use in an actual situation on the street in combat. So mm-hmm. you know, so for whatever other reason that instructor may be in that art, that instructor still has an obligation, I feel, to you know, give that art in a way that would be useful to me, and not in a way that would be, well, how do I defend against this guy with this art, as opposed to how do I make this guy better with my art?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess, and I know I'm kind of rambling, and I'm sorry about that, but I feel like, you know, it's just something that it has been weighing on me as I go back to try to train, and I want to find guys to train with, and some of these younger guys today. Even guys that I know what they are, and I know physically they're, you know, I don't have the stamina or the endurance that they would have, but there's a disconnect. That there's a disconnect mm-hmm. between the instructor and the students now that I see, that really, you know, it perplexes me, you know, because I think about, you know, the people that I've been blessed to train with, and I'd say mm-hmm. it was a blessing because I feel it was a blessing. You know, and you know, Greg Wilders being my cousin is one, but Master Rakowski was another, and those are people that I trained with, and I saw and learned what it is, what the martial arts is about, and more and more now, I just feel like I see martial arts as a community. I see it dwindling in the terms of the true sense of what a martial artist is supposed to be and how they're supposed to live their life. And sometimes, you know, I feel like instructors start to be, they kind of get numb to the whole, what they got into the art in the first place. They know it and they feel it, but maybe after a certain period of time, I don't know what it is, but they get to a point where the true nature of that art, whatever it may be, or the nature of that man or that instructor or that female or that instructor or whatever the case may be, is not consistent with how it started, and it starts to show. And I wasn't really expected to talk about it, so I didn't really know how I was going to say, but you guys were asking what I was thinking about, you know, and that's what it is. But I just feel like, I think there's a cause for instructors as a whole to really, I think for all of us, you know, for all mm-hmm. of us that feel like we can give something back, a call for all of us to really sit back and think about who we are as martial artists or whatever it is we're teaching or whatever we're trying to give back. We just need to make sure that we take stock in ourselves, as we, you know, because we have to make sure that we're right, not only, you know, in technically and emotionally and spiritually, you know, all of those things have to be right before mm-hmm. because it's a great responsibility when you're trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're teaching, I think, you know, those things have to be there. So,
Eric, I think you have a fantastic attitude, and unfortunately, I hope we can hook up some more and talk about it, because I think it's great. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the one thing that I noticed a little different is I don't think this is anything new, to be honest with you.
Right.
I think we're noticing it more because it's more expanded, but I don't want to name drop. But let's go back to the late 60s when we're talking about Bruce Lee, and
mm-hmm.
I'll let Bob chime in on this because he's a JKD guy, but he got closed off. People were challenging him, saying, you know, you can't be sharing this knowledge, you can't be doing this, you can't be doing that. And all he really wanted to do was share.
Right.
At the same time, he was working with people like Wally J and learning to, you know, he was learning from the instructors as much as they were learning from him. And,
right.
I think that's really the kind of attitude that I think we should all have.
Right.
I learned as much from my white belt students as they learned from me. And I think that's, you know, within my own four walls. And if I go to a seminar or go to a big martial arts event, I'm learning as much from these other people as they're learning from me. And
right.
I think that's really the type of family attitude and you know, that we should be cultivating. I right. completely agree with you.
Right, right. Yeah, because I think sometimes, you know, when there is the marketing and the competition for video sales or whatever the case may be, you know, it kind of that whole attitude of learning, you learn from me, I learn from you, whatever I got
mm-hmm.
you have is yours. You know, I want to give it to you. You know, not
right.
you know, but I think there's too much guarding of what they
yeah.
think they know, what they think that is. Makes them or their art like some kind of like a competitive advantage. You know, you don't
mm-hmm.
need a competitive. This is not business. I don't think. I mean, I don't look at it as business. I look at it as giving the art or giving myself or giving what I feel to be the. You know, that's where I get great joy from is expressing my truths about combat, my truths about the reality of conflict. I get great joy out of that, and sometimes I guess when I come across people that I don't get that same sense of I don't know if it's respect for what they believe or if it's a willingness to share what they believe. And I just think sometimes it's when you say you're an instructor or you say that you're a student of anything, you know, I think, you know, there has to be a willingness to give and to share and to take and to, you know, and like you said, and I think the point that you just made was great as a, you know, understanding that as a community of martial artists and warriors or whatever you want to call it, there is a community of it, and there's people that understand it, and there's people that don't understand it. And there's probably people that are woven throughout the whole system, just like in any other facet of society. But, you know, but I think it's time for the ones that do get it to kind of band together more and rally together more and be willing to train with and willing to take instruction from and really try to take themselves to another level so that we can all as a whole go to another level. Because I know for me, as a security guy, I can't afford not to want my guys to be as good as me or better.
Right.
I don't want guys that don't think that they can possibly be as good as me or better. You know, I guess my ego no longer works in the way of having to compare it or having to dictate it. I just feel like there has to be more of the more sharing going on and more giving of ourselves as teachers of what we think is you know, shit. In my opinion, the ultimate.
It's the internet. It's the
yeah,
internet. You can pretty much say anything. Don't worry about it.
You know, and you all are instructors, and you all know what I'm talking about when I talk about being able to give. You know, that's an important thing an important responsibility for us to give to these younger people that are influenced by what we tell them. And if what we tell them is anywhere that's not trying to get to the truth and not completely trying to be truthful, then we're shortchanging them, and we're shortchanging ourselves by calling
us. You made an interesting comment earlier. You said that people that were questioning or that you commented about your truth,
right?
And I think that's a great way to put it. I just put something on Facebook yesterday prior to this that said, "Don't be afraid to question your truth in search
right.
of the truth."
Right.
Because too many people get wrapped up in their own way of doing things. You made another
right.
comment, you said ego. I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
One, I don't think anybody wants to believe that, you know, I think many people don't want to believe that they can learn something from someone else.
Right.
God forbid that, you know, you tell me that my art's not the best in the world. I mean,
right.
you know,
can
we get beyond that, please? You know, I mean, I've always tell my students there's always more than one right answer.
Right.
I mean, just because I don't do it the way you do it doesn't mean that either one of us is better, worse, or right or wrong. It's just different. And everything has a value to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you've got a great approach to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great rant. And yeah, we totally agree. Thank you so much for calling, Derek. And I'm just going to go ahead and let you listen to the rest of the show. And if you've got
yeah,
other
no
questions,
worries.
Go ahead and press the one button.
You got it.
All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Derek.
All right. Thanks for letting me
rant. You bet.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
What a great conversation that was.
I know. And, you know, and it's true because it's kind of like he had a point. You know, as instructors, we do have to give back. I mean, you know, for us to guard our stuff so that way our students, you know, don't get better than us or something like that. I mean, we could get hit by a bus tomorrow and then our art's gone. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, give back, yes. All right.
Totally agree.
So for people that are interested in calling in, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Feel free to call in with your rants, raves, seminar announcements, workshop events, whatever you want to talk about, and we'll get to your call. We promise. All right. Let's get to a little bit of our announcements and news a little bit. So was it yesterday, Bob, that you went to go to the Book Fest event at the Martial Arts History Museum there in Burbank?
It was. It was yesterday. I got there about noon when it opened. I went on till 6. I saw Eric Lee was there, Douglas Wong, Alan Woodman. There were some great martial artists there that I ran into. I had a jet, but they were there displaying all their books. Carl Tott was there with his books, DVD collection, great internal martial artist. Cynthia Rothrock was showing up a little after I left. So was Don Wilson. Alan Woodman, which has also has a show on Blog Talk Radio, like his show ends like an hour before ours begin, was doing his show live from the museum today.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good thing. Some good people were there. I really enjoyed it. Talked to some old friends, found out what Curtis Wong was doing, the old publisher of Inside Kung Fu magazine.
Mm-hmm.
That owned a restaurant with Jackie Chan over in Hawaii, and now he's manufacturing watches of all things. High-end watches, like for P. Diddy and for Snoop Dogg, and Eminem bought his watches, and just high-end stuff. No, we had a great time. It was a real good get-together, great organization to support the Martial Arts History Museum. Even if you just bought a cap, bought a T-shirt, that goes into the preservation of the martial arts. And, of course, Sifu, you were there in August. You saw
mm-hmm.
different things. And they're always bringing in new stuff. It was a great day yesterday.
That's awesome. Very cool. Lots of well-known faces over there that also are authors. So that's cool. And for our listeners out there, if you're ever in the Burbank area, go check out the Martial Arts History Museum. It's pretty cool. It's not like as big as like a big old, you know, art museum or anything like that, but it does have a lot of great artifacts, all of them original. So these aren't reproductions or anything like that. A lot of these things that are on display over there are from private collections that actually belonged to the martial artists or the celebrities that owned them. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right. And, and then last week I went and finally saw that documentary about the Filipino martial arts, The Blade in Hand. Finally. I wanted to see that for a while now since I heard about it coming out. I heard about it like this past summer or something, and I thought, when's it coming out? And I finally saw it. It was a special screening here in Seattle. And the director, Jay Ignacio, and some of his crew actually flew down over here to be able to attend this screening, and it was really cool. I don't want to give away too much about the DVD because of course I want people to like go and buy it. it's really cool. It's a great documentary about how the Filipino martial arts contributed to martial arts in general and how it contributed to martial culture as we know it now. And really great documentary. The director, Jay Ignacio, actually spent 2 years in the Philippines talking and interviewing and studying with several masters just to get their take on the martial arts and the history. Really informative. So, but like I say, I'm not going to I'm not going to give it all away. The formal release should be coming out pretty soon. I don't know when, but if anyone wants to look it up, all you have to do is Google The Bladed Hand or Jay Ignacio, and you'll be able to get information about that. And The Bladed Hand also has a Facebook group. So
there's also a really excellent preview on YouTube. Actually,
There's several trailers.
For it to come out myself. I'm really looking forward to it. I actually was fortunate enough to go to a seminar with Dan and Asanto about 4 weeks ago, and I think the most interesting part was just him talking about the Filipino culture and the history and where it comes from. And it was just amazing. This man is just a walking history book of Filipino martial arts. And I'm a big fan. I have a great love for the Filipino martial arts. I'm really happy to say that within the last decade or so, they're starting to come. You know, that in the United States, people are starting to recognize what a phenomenal and beautiful set of systems they are.
Our first guest was actually the late Lindsay Largusa.
Ah.
And it was just this phenomenal show. Our first show was just amazing because he added so much of the history and his lineage was just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great show, and this DVD is incredible. There is talk about a Bladed Hand 2 and 3. So I'm looking forward to that.
I can't wait.
But yeah. Yeah, so when it comes out on DVD, I'm surely going to buy one because it was great. And there's going to be more stuff in the on the DVD, some extra, you know, stuff at the end of the DVD, like longer interviews or stuff like that. So it'll be really cool. But yeah, it really, really great. And when it comes out, buy the DVD, people. It really goes into how it affected not only martial culture, but how it affected cinema. I mean, like so many movies out there, right? You know, that have the elements of Filipino martial arts in it, like the whole Born Identity series. The Book of Eli, Payback, what was another one? Mission Impossible, Repo Man. I haven't seen Repo Man, although people told me that there was like something that looked like Filipino martial arts in there, so it was kind of like, so yeah, I mean, really, really great stuff. So yeah, get the DVD.
Very cool.
All right, and John, do you have any announcements or seminars or goings on in your neck of the woods over there?
Well, I will tell you this then. I'm glad you gave me an opportunity. The first weekend of April up here in upstate New York in Saratoga Springs, New York, we're going to do the 13th annual Saratoga Martial Arts Festival.
Cool.
This is the festival that Dr. Steve Perlman and I kind of started. We started out 13 years ago. It was he, myself, and about a dozen of our students. And we just kind of wanted to get together and train together and learn from each other, which, is, you know, like Derek had said, is not something that you know, is typically found in most cases. The next year, we had a couple more people join us, a couple more instructors. The year after that, we were up to maybe 10 instructors. And it's continued to grow. Last year was our 12th year. And we had 20 instructors and about 250 people were in attendance. And we're planning for a bigger year this year. It really focuses on the similarities of the martial arts, not the differences.
We have
instructors and students from every lineage you can imagine and every style, every system, all working together. One of our mantras is no egos allowed. And, it's an amazing, amazing experience. There is a website out there. I think it's called SaratogaMartialArtsFestival.com, I believe. I don't set that up, but yes. So if anybody's interested, they're in the upstate New York area. We actually have people come as far away as California to come, you know, come teach or come participate. It's a great, great event. So that's probably the thing I'd promote the most right about now.
Oh, cool! Awesome.
Nice.
And this is going on when again?
This is the last weekend of April. The first weekend of April. So it's either the 5th or the 6th or the 6th or the 7th, whatever that Saturday, Sunday is. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but it is truly a phenomenal event. We've pretty much grown into a huge, it's a non-competitive martial arts seminar event. And this year we're going to have some great things. I get to teach again this year. I'm very fortunate enough to do that, and Steve will be teaching. And then we have... the Masters of the Filipino Martial Arts. Dr. Tim Harpin out of Buffalo
Oh, cool.
is bringing some pretty heavy, pretty big names in martial arts and Filipino martial arts to come teach this year. So it's going to be great. It's going to be a phenomenal event.
Very cool. That's exciting.
Right.
Okay, so SaratogaMartialArtsFestival.com. So listeners, if you're in that area, go check that out. Sounds like a really cool thing. All right. Well, let's get into some health news. The call-in lines are not lit up quite yet. So yeah, let's get into health news. I'll start. All right. So now this particular story, I'm just going to go ahead and read it off. This study bolsters the link between routine hits to the head and brain disease. Not necessarily brain injury, but brain disease. Okay? So the growing evidence of a link between head trauma and long-term degenerative brain disease was amplified in an extensive study of athletes, military veterans, and others who absorbed repeated hits to the head, according to new findings published in the scientific journal Brain, quote-unquote. The study was conducted by investigators at the Boston University Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy. I can't say that. Encephalopathy. I did. Encephalopathy. And the Veterans Affairs Boston Healthcare System, in collaboration with the Sports Legacy Institute. It took 4 years to complete, included subjects that ranged anywhere from 17 to 98 years old, and more than doubled the number of documented cases of CTE. CTE. I lost my place. The investigators also created a four-tiered system that classified degrees of CTE, hoping that it would help doctors treat patients. Now, of the group of 85 people, 80%, which was about 68 men, nearly all of whom played sports, showed evidence of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, the degenerative and incurable disease whose symptoms can include memory loss, depression, and dementia. Now, among the group found to have CTE, 50 were football players, including 33 who played in the NFL. Among them were stars like Dave Dwersen, Cookie Gilchrist, and John Mackey. Many of the players were linemen and running backs, positions that tend to have more contact with opponents. Now, despite the breadth of the findings, the study, like others before it, did not prove definitely that head injuries sustained on the field caused CTE. To do that, the doctors would need to identify the disease in living patients using imaging equipment, blood tests, or other techniques. Researchers have not yet been able to determine why some athletes who performed in the same conditions did not develop CTE. So this is all a study in progress. So I guess the study is going to keep going about the link between sports that involve head hits and chronic brain disease. So, wow. Pretty scary.
I don't know if brain disease, I'm confused by the phrase brain disease, because it sounds like there was trauma of some type.
Yeah.
And it continued, you know what I mean? And it just continued to develop from there. So it's an interesting way that they're putting those two things together, but it does seem like apples and oranges, but I see it.
It does. But, you know, I picked up the story mainly because, I was interested in seeing, you know, what they've done so far with it. And
right.
So far, the story is longer, but I just shortened it down. So far, they have studied brains of people that have died, and
right.
But that really doesn't say anything, right? You know, because
right.
Technically you can't prove that they died because of encephalopathy. I might be saying it wrong. I guess the study would have to be done on living patients and stuff like that, just to see if there is a link to that. So. Hey, it looks like we have another caller. Let's go ahead and
cool.
take that. We go into new health news or weird news. So we've got area code 206, 948. Hi, 948. What can we do for you?
Oh, just trying to listen in. right now.
Oh.
I was going to rent earlier, so how you doing, Christy? It's Lynn.
I'm doing pretty good. Now, for our listeners out there, this is Lynn Yancha. She is the new host of another show here on the Seika Network called Century Health Talk. She is a licensed massage practitioner and has a great show that goes on biweekly every Tuesday at 8 p.m. But
Tuesday.
Every other Tuesday. Sorry, every other Tuesday, biweekly. I think that's the term, right? We had that argument before, right, about biweekly.
Yes, it had two meanings.
Yeah, it's either once every 2 weeks or twice every month. Or twice a week, that's right. I'm so confused. So no rant, huh? No rave, no shout-outs?
No, well, I don't know. I was going to go on top of what the other gentleman called in about when he was ranting about the training and all that stuff is the what I've heard from you in the past, and it's very much in line with my line of work where people expect it for free. So they're expecting you
this.
To train them for free, and everybody's expecting me to give it for free. Me and a colleague of mine went marketing yesterday in Tacoma, and we were set up, and we had our price list, and the longer you have a massage, it gets down to about $1 a minute. And people are coming up and like, hey, is that for free? And I said, nah, we have to pay our bills.
Right. Right. Now,
Go ahead.
Oh, so why would you think in your field? Because you know, in our field, you know, when people ask for free, it's mainly because they want cheap classes. But we'll get into that some other time. But so in your profession, why do you think people would want something for free that definitely, you know, takes a lot of training to go through? Like, you know, do you think it's because of the...
In comparison to other training in the medical field, definitely it's much, much less and less costly than they pay.
Right.
As far as people thinking about it for free, it's most likely because in the past, the way I would only assume, in the past, most massage therapists, because it's a service, and there's a lot of service-oriented products out there that they have to try out first, and so on and so forth, to see if it's any good or whatnot. But because lately as well, people, massage therapists are marketing themselves giving out free massages, and they are calling it free. I prefer to call it complimentary.
Okay,
So... And so the branding of massages is now becoming free. And unfortunately, when you market it that way, then it becomes worth less or no value.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody else is willing to give it for free. And I think that's what's happening. And the way I do that, if I do give out complimentary massages, it's no more than 10 to 15 minutes. And I want your email.
In that case, it becomes sort of like a trade, and it becomes fair, right?
Correct.
But,
you want to try out my massages, give me your email, and I'll tell you more about it later. But go ahead and write in your name and your email address. Take a seat here and let me know what you think. And here's my card, and call me and set up an appointment.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think a lot of that attitude also from the general public might be also because of a misunderstanding of what a massage therapist is in comparison to, like, let's say, a quote-unquote masseuse?
Oh, most likely. Okay, you have to understand the reason why we don't like that word. It has a connotation of gender. Masseuse is a female massage person. I don't want to say therapist because not all masseuses are in the therapy business.
Exactly.
Masseur is a male massage person. And those two terms are practically used in the massage parlor business.
The parlor,
At least in the state of Washington, I can only talk about the state, the license of massage therapists are considered medical license. Heck, we can't even... take tips if we're accepting you know, insurance in our office.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, because you don't tip your dentist or you don't tip your medical doctor. So, as massage therapists accepting insurance, we do not accept or require anybody to tip us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's got to be frustrating, though, right? The more people that walk by your booth and go, is it free? Is it free? Is it free? You know,
no,
like at a
trade
show?
It can be frustrating. So I kind of make sure that they understand nothing is for free. We mm-hmm. can compliment your hair as far as, you know, massaging a scalp. And, you know, nice hairdo. But we're mm-hmm. messing it up right now. So I kind of turn it into something funny, if possible, so get their guard down. Or at least I say, I'll trade you for your email, and they're more than willing to get a 10-minute massage for their email. Hopefully they gave me a correct email, but, you know,
right.
whatever. So that they know nothing is necessarily for free. I mean, even a handshake is good enough for me. I don't like to brand my massages as free.
Right.
Because I don't want it to have no worth to somebody.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that would be an interesting subject for another show is, you know, for martial arts instructors or anyone else, you know, in the fitness or health industry is, you know, do you give out stuff for free? And if you do, you know, does it change the way that people look at the value of your service? So that would be a great new subject.
Well, depending on how you're branding yourself, if you're always giving out for free, they're just going to wait until your next freebie.
Exactly. And
right.
And then they won't. And then in their head, they won't give it any value unless it becomes free. It becomes something that they can choose to skip out on because it, you know, it costs this time. So I'm just not going to do it. Oh, it's free. Now I'm gonna. Well, there's got to be something of value to it because you want to do it. You know, I mean. You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean.
I see what you're saying, but they're because of the fact that it's free, they're not going to be held accountable for not showing up. They're not
going
to be held accountable for doing anything for you or with you or doing the homework that you sent them to do. They're not going to be accountable for anything because it has no worth, so why should they take it home?
Yeah, and that's kind of the point I was trying to make is, like, a lot of people – I'm not saying all people, but a lot of people, and this is frustrating for us martial arts instructors too, is that, you know, if you give a service and they don't, like in our case, let's say someone asks you, okay, you know, I want my orange belt or whatever. And you go, okay, well, you need this, this, and this, and this. And you teach them, you even like, say, okay, you know, I'll meet with you for 15 minutes for, you know, some free one-on-one or whatever, blah, 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 practice that, and then we'll see what happens in a month, and we'll get you to your orange belt. Well, if they go home and they don't practice at all, and they keep coming to class, right, and then they get all upset when they're not on the next testing roster because they haven't practiced, you know, or they haven't done what you said, or they, you know, they haven't been responsible and accountable
mm-hmm. yep.
for what you've suggested, then they get all upset.
Exactly. I get clients like that too. Hey, we're not going anywhere. Well, have you been drinking water? Oh, no.
No.
Been
of course not.
kind of.
Well, I'm drinking water. It doesn't have scotch in it. Does that count?
Well, Lynn, I wouldn't take that too personally. Most people don't listen to their regular doctors anyway. So, I mean, you know, you need exercise and cut back on fatty foods, and you know, that I wouldn't take personally. I think part of your issue is coming from the nature of the industry. I mean, I remember a number of years ago that chiropractors were looked at not necessarily with the respect that they deserved, and, you know, oh, they're not even real doctors, they're chiropractors kind of thing. I think I've seen a shift in the last few years on that, and I think the same thing maybe happened with massage therapists. I know a number of massage therapists in my areas, and I just don't know if they have the respect that they deserve within the medical industry as of yet. You know what I mean?
Well, that depends also the state and how they're viewed and what kind of massages they're actually given out as a service.
True.
I mean, it goes all ways too. Even with medical doctors, I've heard. clients who have come into my office referred by their doctor or referred by their physical therapist when I ask them, are you doing the exercises that they're giving you? And they say no. And most of the time, doctors don't give anybody exercises. They give them prescription for pills.
Right, right.
And going back to the first ranter, this society is actually into the pill syndrome. It's like one pill fixes everything.
Right.
Or a few pills fixes everything. Like, all they have to do is watch a video, and they're, yeah, I'm with a martial artist,
exactly.
An actor. You know?
I've met people like that that come into my studio.
I wonder if they can watch a massage video and say, hey, I just been massaged for an hour.
You know, I've met people that go, oh, you know, my wife says I've got really good hands for massaging her neck. Maybe I would make a really good massage therapist. And they don't get that they actually need training. They think they can just, like, open up some brick-and-mortar place and then put up a sign and say, I'm a massage therapist.
Well, hence, this is why licensing is required in the state of Washington. You have to have at least 500 hours, which is really not enough. I had 1,080, and it felt like it wasn't enough. But it was enough to pass the board exam, which is so you can get your license. But other than that, they just, you know, give you the basic, and the rest of it is up to you to train outside of school. You know, same thing with, I guess, with you guys as martial arts. You go with the first one that you kind of, you felt something, an affinity to learn. Like, I guess for Tifu Dan, it would be Taekwondo. And then from there, he went and thought, oh, what is this one? That looks like something more than I'm into. Oh, what is that one? And I didn't know anything about FMA until I saw the movie, The Bladed Hand. I'm going, are you really? We're that famous in a sense, but no fame attached to it, and everybody's doing it? Wait a minute, I want to learn now. I go, see, for a second, give me a couple of sticks. I'll play with them.
You know, I placed an order today for someone else's sticks, and I completely forgot to put your sticks in there. I'm sorry. I'll do that.
Okay.
Thanks for reminding me.
It was a reminder.
Yeah, it was. Well, that was a cool rant, and I hope that because it came around for chiropractic, I hope that in the next, that as time goes on, hopefully sooner than later, that people really start understanding the value behind massage therapy as a whole, and give value to the people that do the training to be able to be good medical massage therapists. You know, what you're doing with sports massage and medical massage, it's awesome. And I'm going to go ahead and plug you right now because, you know, Lynn has helped me with a three-month chronic migraine. I had this migraine for 3 months. It would not go away. She was around when I was, like, trying to, like, function and couldn't, like, walk hardly and, like, halfway crying and stuff. And she's like, okay, that's it. You know, you got to do what I tell you. And I came in for treatment. I did what she told me, and migraine free after only, what was it, a week and a half of treatment?
Yeah, it was almost 2 weeks, actually. Yeah.
And, you know, when I do feel a headache coming on, I still, like, do pull the hair, massage the scalp, where she taught me and stuff. And because if she's going to give me that knowledge, right, then in order for me to show that I appreciate it, wouldn't it make sense for me to use it? You know what I mean? Rather than going, oh, I got a migraine again. Well, you know, have you been drinking water? Have you been No. Well, what the heck, you know? What am I, chopped liver? I don't want her to think that. So, you know, yeah. So hopefully sooner than later, the public, general public, will hopefully come around and really see your field as something that is really, really useful within the medical field. So.
It would really help that the massage therapy community actually starts weaning themselves off the general, how do you call it, people see most massage therapists as flaky, and there's a few of us that are trying to stay away from that. Although this came I called in for a rant. I also want to rave all my clients. There's Vestida as well. all my clients, because without them, I wouldn't be in business. And I've been in business for 13 years, and they believe in the work that I do, and then they actually do the homework. And the best compliment you can ever give any service-oriented business, just such as my business and such as your business in the martial arts, is to refer somebody.
Right. Right. Very good. So, yes. So, I'll make sure that
much.
I put that shout out for you.
Put me on hold, and I'll be listening for the rest of the
okay. Awesome. Well, thanks for calling, Lynn.
Oh, thank
I
you.
I always see people in recent times, every time you get a headache, for some reason, I'm involved.
Oh, gosh.
All right.
All right. We're gonna,
does that mean
we're gonna...
I need to must.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Lynn. I almost, like, I tried to mute your mic. What was that?
Oh, does that mean I have to be massaging Bob so that you won't get a headache?
You know, one of these days, what me and Bob should try to do is to try to get you on into the Masters Hall of Fame event as the massage therapist for that weekend, because there are seminars going on that weekend. So, I don't know. What do you think, Bob?
I like it. It would probably be on a tip-only basis, though, Lynn, but you that might be a really big thing, and we could talk to the
hey, you know,
to
I
that might
for
be a really
food.
Good idea.
If I can work for food, really, and a place to stay.
Okay. Well, we'll see about trying to pick the brain of the Masters Hall of Fame CEO. And
that would actually be great, yeah.
We have a massage therapist at SMAP, at the Saratoga Martial Arts Festival, and she's excellent, and it's really gotten a lot of positive feedback. It's been a great addition to the venue.
Oh,
I mean, I see massage as part of the training as well. I mean, if they're going to be beating up their body training, then they need to also have a way to recover.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely. But that's good to know,
well,
John.
I was at a seminar years ago, Sifu, that it was a Larry Arcel, Mark Stewart, and Edgar Salipe seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a chiropractor there that was giving adjustments. And if anybody had ever worked out with Larry Arcel, that's what you needed.
You're
going to
need one. That's right. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and pick Hanshi Danhek's brain on that, see what he thinks. And, you know, like we said, you know, it's probably only going to be tip only, because a lot of the funds go to the event itself.
No worries.
But we'll see how that works. So, anyhow, I'll go ahead and mute your mic. And
thank you. And
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And let's go to area code 518, first three numbers 248. So 518 248. Thanks for holding and being so patient. Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to talk about the misconception that punching is the go-to technique for striking.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that there's quite a few systems that pretty much just say if you're going to strike somebody, do it with a punch. And I don't know, I hear a lot of people breaking knuckles, breaking wrists.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what you guys thought about that.
You know, I read something about this on Facebook.
Who is this?
Jeez, I wonder who
John.
Put that out there.
Yeah.
John was, wait, who's calling now? Is this John?
Yes.
Oh, well, then, okay. And then we got John Porter.
Right, not that one.
Okay, so Sensei Border, was it on your Facebook page or was it on somebody else's? I think I was...
No, it was my Facebook page, actually.
Oh, was it?
I
I was gonna respond to it because, yeah, oh my goodness. But, yeah, so what are your thoughts on it, Sensei Border, about
punching? Just to generate the question again for the people that might not be familiar with it, I put it out there that said, you know, I think it's well-known thought process that when teaching self-defense, we teach people to hit open-handed rather than with a closed fist, because a closed fist, you know, there's a lot of potential for damage, like John just said. And I want to know what people thought about it. And because when I teach my women's self-defense classes, we have probably the most popular women's self-defense class in upstate New York right now. It's just booming for us. And we're big on not hitting with closed fists. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, if we know it's going to cause damage, we know it's going to be an injury, what do you people think? And I got a lot of different responses to that. One of the things I did point out on the Facebook post is I wasn't questioning anybody's methods or really wasn't challenging the way anybody does anything. I'm really more questioning myself right now because I've taught punching, but I've taught open-hand strikes. I've been doing this for 25 years, and about 2 years ago I hit a heavy bag the wrong way and I broke my hand in four places. So that got me thinking a little bit. Why would I teach a 119-pound woman how to punch someone if I can't even hit a bag, you know, without the risk of injuring myself? Another number of people came back and said, well, I've done the same thing. But I think the biggest example that comes out when I talk about this is Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, a number of years back, before his fight with Mitch Green, actually went out the night before and got into a bar fight and broke his hand. And he's a professional fighter. This is what he does. You know what I mean? So if Mike Tyson, who has, a certain degree of conditioning on his hands, even though he does wear gloves, as opposed to most people, is going to break his hand by hitting someone, who are we to be teaching, you know, beginners or even advanced people, you know, how to punch? I have to seriously question, you know, that mentality, and even within my own system and my own way of doing things these days. I just think there's an inherent danger to that that approach. And people came back with different types of opinions and feedback. I thought was very enlightening. So.
Yeah, that was a great discussion on your page. I was going to respond, but then I had to get to driving, so I'm like, I couldn't do that. But what about you, Steve Bob? What are your views on punching or
well,
gay or?
I did respond to it, and it goes. I explained it goes back to the old kung fu adage of hard on soft on hard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't punch
right.
somebody.
Right.
You don't typically hit somebody with a closed fist where it's going to hurt yourself. That's where your palm
right.
strikes, knife hands, spear hands come in. If it's a low strike, stomach, solar plexus. Solar plexus is a bad example, but stomach, it's a closed fist because it's a soft area, the groin, the thighs, anything. In fact, the way I explain it is anything from the neck up is palm and or open hand. Anything from the neck below is closed fist because there's a softer tissue area. Neck
right.
would be
right.
Knife hands or spears.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bob's got a great point, and so I kind of respond to that. Maybe we'll get some callers to call in and debate these points with us.
That'd be cool.
I've always taught the same thing, hard and soft and hard. But then lately I've been really digging more into the adrenaline rush and to the adrenaline stress training analogy. And the thought that started coming to mind with that is it's great to be able to pick a target, or it's great to say I'm going to use this weapon against this target and this weapon against that target. But when the shit hits the fan, is how I'll openly state it, and we're into that zone where things, it's an ambush type situation, do we really have the capability to say, okay, when things are flying and I've got the blinders on because I had adrenaline rush and everything else, to say, okay, I'm hitting above the neck or I'm hitting below the neck and I have to use a closed fist or I have to use the open hand. Again, I'm not debating the concept. I think the concept is very sound. I'm questioning in the real scenario situation outside of the dojo, is that really a practical course of thought? And I'm saying this for myself, not necessarily against anybody else. I'm rethinking how I get into it. Let's face it, it's not 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago where hardcore martial artists are training hitting your water boards for 8 hours a day. Or digging their hand into gravel and sand to toughen their hands. We've got, you know, soccer moms and lawyers and people that go to the dojo an hour and a half a week, for the fun of training and hopefully some people want to get to the point of realistic self defense. Is it really seriously to say, oh, that's what we're going to do and hard on soft on hard? Can we pull that off? I guess is my thing. The other thing I started thinking about. I'll let you comment on that first. I don't want to go much deeper than that right now. So.
Well, what do you think, John? Caller John, what are your views on punching?
I think that especially
when you're talking about punching, you need to worry more about your body mechanics than the target itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you punch and your hand is twisted 90 degrees the wrong way, you're more likely to break your bones than your forearm because they're crossed over themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to teach somebody what to punch, you should teach them how to punch first. And typically it's taught wrong for the sake of simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's to allow the student to figure it out themselves as they progress. Because if instructors spent all their time teaching the student proper body mechanics, then they wouldn't ever learn their forms or their actual techniques.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
That
is a good point. Because I look at the traditional punch, you know, that comes from the hip as mainly a coordination type of a exercise in a way, you know, to make sure that you twist and keep it straight, keep the elbow dropped, and then twist and hit with those two knuckles, right? It's a great way for beginners to really think about what their bodies are doing, to get a feel of how their bodies are moving in space. But after that, I found that when the mitts come up and we're doing mitt work and stuff like that, even if I say, okay, let's just do some slap boxing on the mitts, they'll try to punch. And I don't know if it's because they see it a lot on TV. This is what you have to do. You have to punch. But when I see them punch, their elbows are flared out, or they're hitting with their pinky knuckle, or their wrist is bent, or they're touching with their thumb first. And I go, wow, you know, should I, you know, really continue, you know, teaching this, you know, traditional type of punching anymore? So I'm questioning it too, Sensei Border, the same as you are. You know, I'm asking myself, you know, what, you know, how should I go on with this? You know,
part of it too is in the dojo and in the dojang or whatever they call your school, because every style is a little different. You have to ask yourself, do you ever really hit 100% without some type of padding or some type of pad or some type of protective situation? And the answer would be no, because that would be suicide. You can't do that in a real training environment. But once you step outside that training environment where things are not padded and things are not, you know, you don't have gloves on, that changes so many different things. I mean, I broke my hand. Mike Tyson broke his hand. Master McCagg, who's a gentleman that I know, who's an incredible martial artist, busted his knuckles up because he did on the street what we were trained to do in the dojo, which is punch. And part of the other issue that I come into is I'm not even sure if it's training in the dojo. I mean, I think inherently people tend to make fists and punch. Like you said, we're conditioned that way. We all grew up with the John Wayne movies kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have an answer. I just ask the question.
I can't say,
you know, how to train someone to do it this way or train someone that way. I worry that, let me go somewhere else with this. Everyone that responded from their own perspective, which I completely respect, but it also brought up a very key point. You know, well, we do it this way. Well, we do it that way. Okay, you're not listening to the question. This is a universal question. I'm not challenging anybody specific. I'm glad you do it that way. I don't care what system you practice or what style you do. Ask yourself, is this the right way to do it? Because, you know, outside the dojo, the dynamics change. And is it really safe? So, again, I don't have any answers. I just like throwing out those questions to get those exciting conversations going. So.
Yeah, and it was exciting. And then I thought the same thing, too. I was like, wow, let's get back to the question, people. You know?
Oh, uh-huh. Me too.
Yeah. But you know, I do like Caller John's comment about, you know, if your instructor, you know, is willing to teach the proper body mechanics and the proper use for it, just as we would teach proper body mechanics for like an open hand technique, then it would do our students a great service. But I guess what I'm talking about is like the traditional type of punching, because, you know, I've seen people try to, you know, put their hands up in a guard position and then try to do a traditional punch from there. And because they're not used to it, you know, or if the target or the mitt is at some cockamamie angle or something, then their form goes all cockamamie too, to make up for it, because they're not conditioned to make up for any change in targeting or range or whatever. And I guess that's what a good instructor is for. So,
Christine, yeah. You have a good point. And to play off of something John said, that, you know, an instructor has an obligation to teach proper form and proper, you know, proper ways to strike. But they don't necessarily spend a lot of time on it, he said, because, you know, they want to focus on other things, whatever.
Yeah.
I tend to question in a lot of cases, is it that they're not teaching it because they're trying to focus on something else and allow the student to discover it themselves, like John had said, or mm-hmm. they're not teaching it because they don't know?
That's a good question.
I have no problem with throwing myself out there to have people say, oh, who the hell is he thinking? Look, there's a lot of instructors there that just don't know what the hell they're doing. They think if
right.
I can punch a bag, then I'm a street fighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way. There's an instructor in this area. His name is Grandmaster Tom Mazzaferro, and he's an A3 black belt in Taekwondo.
Mm.
But you never see this guy do a jump spinning kick. You never see this guy do some of these aerial acrobatics. But he'll go to these schools and he'll work on tombs and katas, and he'll adjust people's angles and punches by 1 or 2 degrees because this is how it's supposed to be. I mean, he knows this stuff inside and out, and I've sparred with him. He's absolutely phenomenal. But you have other people, other instructors looking at him like he has three heads because he's making these slight adjustments and these tiny, you know, specific, minute changes for real strong reasons. And they're looking at him like, well, why do we have to do that? I don't understand. And these people are fourth and fifth degree black belt. So I think in a lot of cases, it's not necessarily that the instructor is allowing the student to discover it themselves, which I want to say is dangerous in many cases.
Yeah.
But two, maybe they just don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe they just don't understand the depth of what they're doing in some cases. And that's you know, something I see quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. That's a great question too. see, Sensei Border, you need your own show. I'm going to start pushing you on this to join our network because yeah, you'd make a great host with great questions. I mean, I'd be calling it a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So thanks, Caller John, for your question. I'm going to go ahead and feel free to listen to the rest of the show. Caller John, I'll go ahead and mute your mic.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and take a short 4-minute break. Because I need a drink of water. I was, like, coughing earlier, and I don't think I muted my mic in time, so I hope I didn't, like, blow everyone's ears out by coughing. So I need to go get a drink of water and stuff. So let's go ahead and take a short 4-minute break, and let's all come back here in about 3.5-4 minutes and get back to our ranting and raving. So let's take a little break with Al Jarreau.
We'll be right back.
The Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. If you're just tuning in, we've got our special guest co-host, Mr. John Border, and our guest call-in number here is 347-677-0699. This is our rant, rave, and rap show. So if you're listening and you got something you want to rant about, if you got something that you want to rave about, or if you want to send out compliments, shout-outs, holiday greetings, whatever you want to talk about, feel free to call in. We have about 35 minutes left on the show. And I know we didn't get into too much of news, but let's go ahead and before we get to Bob's weird news, I'm looking forward to your weird news, Bob. Let's go ahead and do the trivia question of the week. Let's get that out of the way. I think this will be fun. So for our listeners that don't know about our trivia question of the week, what happens is every week we have a trivia question, and the first person to call in with the correct answer will get, well, absolutely nothing except for bragging rights. No. No, you actually get to have the opportunity to be a guest co-host along with me and Sifu Bob. And that's why Sensei John Border is with us. He was the first to answer last week's trivia question with the correct answer, and he's now having fun with us on the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. So you have to be the first caller. Yeah, this is so much fun. I told you this is a fun show. So you have to be the first caller, okay, for the rest of the show. And again, we've got about half an hour left of the show. Now, if by the end of the show nobody calls in, that's okay. I'm going to go ahead and post the question on our Dynamic Dojo group page on Facebook. So if you're the first correct answer person, you can be a co-host with me and Sifu Bob, and you get to brag about getting the trivia question right. All right, so let's go to our trivia question of the week. Here it is. Who was the only president to completely pay off the national debt and leave office with a surplus in the treasury? Again, who was the only president to completely pay off the national debt and leave office with a surplus in the treasury? First correct answer, call in 347-677-0699. All right.
Wow, that is a great question, Sifu.
Isn't that cool?
I actually know the answer to this one, but I won't say anything because, you know.
Because you're already a host right now. So you don't count. All right. So we're going to, wait a minute. I think Lynn pressed one. Lynn, did you press one? Do you have the answer? Lynn, are you there? Lynn, are you there?
Sorry, I'm on mute on my own phone.
Oh, okay. So I see you pressed one, so did you have the answer?
Can I guess?
You want to? Yeah, you can guess.
The only president I know who did that is President Clinton. Really?
Yeah, not correct. Sorry.
Oh, wow. No way.
Okay. I'm sorry. Sifu, what was her guess?
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah, I knew that was wrong.
Okay.
But nice try, though.
Okay.
What? What's that? That was a great try, though. So,
it was.
But thanks.
Was.
That was great. Cool. I'm going to go ahead and put you on hold again. All right. So first correct answer, 347-677-0699. Feel free to call in. Come on, people. I know there are people listening out there. What? You don't want to be a host on the Dynamic Dojo radio show? Come on. It's fun. John's having
fun. Anybody on our chat board, Sifu?
No. So everyone okay. must be out playing hooky or something. All right. So let's go to your weird news today, Bob. That would be
well,
cool.
This makes me not want to ever visit Hong Kong.
Okay.
There is a woman in Hong Kong that is pretty accurate at looking at a man and
uh-huh.
knowing if he's unfaithful. Just looking at him.
Okay, so this is a woman in general or women in general?
No, a certain particular woman in Hong Kong.
Oh.
It says she could look at a man and say, you're not faithful, or you are faithful.
What?
To your significant other. Yeah, it says a woman
what?
Can tell some accuracy whether an unfamiliar male is faithful simply by looking at his face. But men seem to lack the same ability when checking out women. According to an Australian study. No kidding, right?
I was going to say, why am I not surprised? But no, never mind. Okay. But so how did she?
Well, it says in a paper that appeared in the journal Biology Letters, the researcher found that women tended to, I have to switch pages, sorry about that, tended to make that judgment based on the masculine look. So I guess it is more of a generalization of women, but it's out
uh-huh.
of Hong Kong. And
oh, okay.
Women's ratings of unfaithfulness showed small to moderate significant correlations with measurable amount of actual infidelity.
Oh, wow.
Led by Gillian Rose at the ARC Center of Excellence in Cognition. In Cognition
oh, okay.
and its disorders at the University of Western Australia in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
More masculine-looking men were rated as more probable to be unfaithful and having a sexual history of being more unfaithful, I guess, than a man with more of a feminine look to him than a rugged
mm-hmm.
gentleman, is what they're saying. Which
huh.
is actually, when I don't know, could you do that as a woman, see if we look at somebody and go, oh, you cheating bastard?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can see where, you know, people would think that, oh, okay, you know, here's this, like, built, rugged-looking guy, attractive guy, he's already probably had a few sexual partners, or he might be one of those guys that looks like he might cheat on his girlfriend or wife or whatever. I can kind of see where people might think that, but does that mean that, like, according to this, you know, that according to women in general, that
well,
ugly dudes
you know,
aren't,
you,
you know, aren't
way.
Capable of...
Yeah, it's funny you said it that way because it also goes on to say that attractiveness was not a factor.
Well, they just said some macho-looking strong guy would be more apt to be found guilty or whatever. Because I think you hit it right on the nose, Steve, when you said that. Good-looking guys probably, you know, have an opportunity to cheat. Dweeby guys, not so much. So.
Yeah, but wow.
And the other thing I think they said was, you know, women would tend to notice this and guys would not. Is that what you said, Bob?
Yes, absolutely.
No secret there either.
Yeah. Right. Well, the odds of men being faithful,
we need a new
talk
for Bob.
I swear.
Yeah. The women know and guys are clueless. Okay, yeah, I can see that. All right, so.
Yeah.
That's absolutely, because it's just a known fact we are.
Yeah.
So,
it's simple.
But,
guys
but,
are clueless.
So you guys can, I'm like talking to you guys like you guys are the only two guys in the planet, but so does that mean guys don't So if you guys were to see some, like, hot chick walking down the road, you wouldn't think that she would have the possibility of being unfaithful? Or does it even occur to you guys?
It doesn't even occur to us. We don't care.
No, that doesn't even occur to us. No.
That's not what's first on our mind. We're not looking at this hot girl going, wow, I wonder if she's cheap.
Oh, gosh. That's funny. It is. Because it's kind of
so
like, you
I'm
know.
I'm going to move on right on to weird laws then, people.
Okay, let's
I'm
move
done
on
with
to
that,
weird
but
laws.
I thought it was very interesting.
Cool. Let's move on to weird laws.
Now, these are all Alaska because I'm going by state per week. In Fairbanks, it is illegal.
Wait, let me bring on Lynn because she's from Alaska.
Oh, nice.
there.
Now remember, Sifu, we discussed last week that there for these to be laws, there must have been a problem.
Yeah. Someone must have done something stupid for these laws to come to fruition, yes.
Absolutely. In Fairbanks, it is illegal to feed feed alcoholic beverages to a moose.
Well, that sucks.
You may not roam any city with a bow and arrow.
Oh, okay. Someone must have hunting season, huh?
Right, hunting season, exactly. Now, this is a weird one. Even though it is legal to shoot a bear,
it
is prohibited to wake a bear up to take a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excuse me, sir, can you... Yeah, I know it's winter, and I know you're hibernating, but can you just sit up and put up a paw or something? Thank you. Let me go back to sleep now. I mean, how does that...
What moron is going to wake up a bear?
I know, right? Well, there's a law.
There is a law. Now, this one would affect you, this next one.
Okay.
A person may not carry a concealed slingshot without the appropriate licensing.
Oh, well, now that sucks. I can't carry around my little pickle fork plinker without a license? There's a
license
for slingshots? Really?
Yes. And this I don't know how this was a problem, but you cannot tie your dog to the roof of your car. Why would people do that?
Well, that's only in Fairbanks, Alaska, right?
No, that's Alaska in general.
In the whole state, it's a state law that you can't tie your dog to the roof of your car.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I got one more. A person may not live in a trailer while it is being towed across the city.
Oh, God.
And that is my weird law for the week.
That's so awesome. Wow. That's wild. So Lynn, wow. Those laws really exist in your old state.
Hey, there's a lot of laws that exist in every single state.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I need to look more at Washington State. I think that
there's one law in Washington State. I think if I can remember correctly, I guess this is way back when cars were very slow. But there was a law out there, and it's still on the books, that in order for you to actually, I think, pass an intersection, somebody has to run in front of a vehicle to let everybody know there's a vehicle behind. So I have no idea how they do that. Let me go run faster than the car to let everybody know you're coming.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Oh, wait. I finally found a site that has a bunch of stuff. Okay. So apparently, here's one for Washington State. The harassing of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or any other undiscovered subspecies is a felony punishable by a fine and or imprisonment.
Wow, not even a misdemeanor. It's a felony.
And apparently...
Well, here's one for Washington. Oh, go ahead.
Apparently, it includes the full text of the law, and it's apparently part of the Undiscovered Species Protection Act. So whereas there is evidence to indicate the possible existence of an undiscovered species of primate mammal variously described as Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or an ape-like creature or a subspecies of Homo sapiens, whereas, and blah, 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 and it goes on forever...
here's an important question, though. Is waking him up to take a picture considering harassing?
Probably not.
Guys. Well,
they didn't make a law out of it yet.
Yeah.
Here's one in Washington. X-rays may not be used to fit shoes.
What?
What?
Yeah.
X-rays?
X-rays may not be used to fit shoes.
That's
which means, I guess, from the way it's worded, you can't take an X-ray of your foot and take it to your shoe dealer and say, here, I want it this size.
That's funny.
Oh.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. And that was the weird laws and weird news for the week. Woohoo! That was awesome. All right. Well, let's get back to the rants and raves. We got about 20 minutes. Bob, you had something you wanted to rant about or rave about. I forgot what, but you had something you wanted to rant about.
Well, I have a few things. One, I just discovered the thing that bugs me most, I think, is inconsiderate people. You and I were talking the other day, and I was in the supermarket parking lot. And this lady was heading across the parking lot with her on one side of the aisle. I was driving down with her cart, and she wanted to put it away in the little cart rack. So she started walking diagonally right in front of my car. No problem. I'm waiting for it to cross so I can go. She doesn't cross in front of my car. She's heading diagonal and then curves and goes straight where I can't pass on either side of her.
Oh, God. And she had no clue that you were behind her, right?
No clue. It's just total unconscious nothing. And another thing that kills me, one of my big rants, and I've gone through this with my son and her where else, the suspension rule in school. Somebody does something wrong, they give them a vacation.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they give them, in fact, I went in the other day and I said, so how many days of vacation are you going to give them this time? Because I was just so upset.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. What did the office people say to that?
They didn't look very happy because I was so angry.
Oh, my gosh.
I was just so irate.
I've always wondered about the suspension thing because it's like, I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm just guessing that, you know, that it made an impression if, you know, if the kids actually liked going to school or if they, you know, if they placed a value on school, you know, back in the day, right? That being suspended was the big taboo and, you know, the big, like, you get teased for, you know, the rest of the quarter because you got suspended. But now... You know, you suspend a kid out of school, some of them don't even care because it is a vacation. They don't get to go to school.
The thing is, people, when you and I were growing up, if we got suspended, the kids were laughing at us because we were black and blue from head to toe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because our parents weren't real thrilled with us.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it made us not want to be suspended. from school.
Oh, and this is one of my last ones because I did have a list of them, and we have some great callers today. One wonderful show. It killed me, and sometimes I do this on purpose. I'll go up to like a fast food place. place or something, and it's, and let's say the bill's like $17 because I had feeding my family, and I give them $22.
Oh, okay, right.
You see the look on their face, like I have three heads, because they don't know why I gave them $22 instead of $20. Because I wanted a five back instead of 3-1.
Right, right.
And that kills me, that they can't figure out the change themselves.
Well, and that's funny you should mention that, because I was at Kentucky Fried Chicken earlier, and the teenager that counted back my change didn't just, type it in and, and then it told you, how much change is back. She just opened it and counted back my change, and there's 60 and 40 makes 4 and da-da-da-da-da-da-10.
Oh,
there you go.
The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned
right.
way. And I went, yeah. And I said, you know what? It's too bad that I can't really tip you, because you're the first teenager that has counted back change to me in about 10 years.
Right.
I've normally had people just put change in my hand or just say, and that's $1.98 back.
Right.
That's it. She
right.
did the math.
That's what the computer
said. That's what the computer
right.
told them. Exactly.
Exactly. That's what the computer told them to say. And it's kind of like, when I was working food service, our cash registers just held cash. That's it.
Right.
There was no like computer junk or whatever. We had to count back change and stuff like that. And
exactly.
and it's really refreshing to see stuff like that. But you don't see it often. So I bet they looked at you like you had three heads. What'd you give me 22? That's going to give you five back.
Well, when I was growing up, my father's biggest pet peeve was if he was in a supermarket, the computer shut down, offline or whatever, the whole market closed.
Really?
It was like when he was a kid, it was all done on paper and pencil.
Right, right.
Of course, you have to remember, my father was also a delivery boy for Henry Ford Jr.
Oh, well, then everything was on ledgers then. Where
no,
the store
everything
owner...
was chiseled out. Everything was chiseled out on stone.
Yeah. The days when stores were not stores, they were mercantiles or something. Oh, my goodness.
Now,
mercantile, is that
there
it?
There is one rant I'm really interested in going into, because you were, like, livid over this whole thing. I really want you to go into the buying a car rant.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I think we have
he
enough time
you about
for this.
The car rant.
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't buy a car for me. My car's still in the shop waiting to get fixed. And, yeah, it's my fault for telling my mechanic to take your time, man. It's no big deal. So he has taken his time. So a friend of mine got in a head-on collision, and her car's totaled, right? So a couple days later, she calls me up and goes, hey, I found this car at a dealership. It's the car I've always wanted. I just never bought it. I wanted it for a couple years, and I found the exact same model, type, brand, year, the whole nine yards, the whole shebang and package inside this car. And can you come with me? Because, I want someone to help me negotiate this car. And I'm like, okay. So she forwarded me this Craigslist ad for this car, and it was listed at $16,950 or something like that. It was a 2010 Subaru Impreza Outback Sport with the full bells and whistles. Every bell and whistle that you can think, it was there. And it was this beautiful blue color. It was pristine. And I'm like, wow, 16. And, I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, okay. So it retailed for like around 23 new. So I'm like, oh, okay, 16. It's been a couple of years. Okay, that sounds about right. Well, she found another ad on Craigslist that listed a similar car, different color, at 14. Well, she was too slow to get it, so someone else bought it right out from under her. So she's like, well, okay, let's go check out this one that's $16,950. Okay, so we go out there, and I said, well, let's pretend that you're just looking around. Don't make it look like you want this car really, really, really bad. Check out the Honda Civic that, check out whatever, right? Check out a couple cars, and then let's pretend that you're making a decision, right? So we did that. We spent about like an hour and a half checking out a few cars. But long story short, salesman goes, so what are you looking for in a car? She's like, well, you know, I want something that can haul stuff, but is not a truck, you know, something like, oh, I don't know, like something like an Outback or a Honda Civic with a hatchback or something. So the salesman took us to the car that she wanted, right? And I kind of looked at her like, this is it, isn't it, right? Of course, there was no price on it. So I said, wow, there's no price on here. Does this mean it's free? And he laughed, and he's like, no, I'm going to have to pull the paperwork on this. You want to take it for a drive? And she said, yeah. So as he went to go get the keys and the paperwork or whatever, I was, I told my friend, I said, I wonder what price he's going to give us. And she's like, well, you know, it was listed on this ad at $16,950. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. So he comes back, and he says that it's $18,790. Okay, so the ad says 16. He's saying almost 19, basically. That's how much it costs. And I kind of looked at him, and I kind of went, okay, you know, can we get the Carfax on this? You know, so we went in and got it some more. And I went, pardon my French. I went, that's a load of bullshit. You know, why is it 18 or almost 19 when it's listed at 16, right? And so anyway, he comes back and he's like, yeah, it's 18,790. And so I said, well, how about 17? He's like, no, we can't go any lower than 18 because of, and he gave us some lame thing, like something about the extended warranty. We'd have to pay for the extended warranty and that a new timing belt got put in there. And, you know, we have to pay for the shop labor. And I said, show me that timing belt. And sure enough, it's a new timing belt. And I'm thinking, well, that's a load of crap. Right. And I'm like, well, you know, we've only got like, you know, 17. Well, no, we can't go any lower than that because it, you know, it'll become a loser deal, that kind of thing. And I'm like, well, that's funny. And I pulled out my phone and I said, well, that's funny because here on Craigslist, it says right there, there's your dealer name. It says that you're selling this at $16,950. And and the car salesman looked at me and my friend like, oh, my God, what do I say? He started tripping over himself. Right. And he's like, I'll be right back. Let me double check on that for you. And then they sent out the floor manager. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, really? And the floor manager gave us this big runaround about just a bunch of filler to justify why this car is almost $1,900 or $19,000. And I said, you know, this thing retailed new at $22,23. We found one exact same year, exact same condition at $14,000. Okay. But we're here because we weren't fast enough. It says 16. Why aren't you selling it to us for 16? And then they sent out the general manager. And I was so livid. I was livid. I was like, and I didn't say it to the general manager, but I wanted to say, what? You know, you see two chicks come into a used car parking lot and you know, oh, here, let's go sell a car to these two dumb chicks. Right.
Right.
You know, I mean, I shouldn't like pull the gender card, but it was like, really? You have it on this ad. And, you know, while they were pulling paperwork or whatever, I Googled that car for, and, you know, and the VIN number and stuff like that. And six different car sites had this ad in it listing this specific car, same VIN number, same model, everything for $16,950. Come get it, it pretty much said, you know. And when the general manager came out, you know, we were like, what is going on? You know, if you can't honor this advertised price, then why have it on there? And then we got some lame excuse about, well, you know, we just talked to the advertisers and it's not even up on our website yet. And, you know, that's a mistake. Well, it's got to be a pretty big mistake because it's on like five or six different car sites, this ad. for 16, right? And now you're telling us it's almost 19. This is stupid, right? He's like, there's no way we'd be able to sell it for $16,950. Then why are these ads up on here? Six different sites. And yeah, my friend made a stink. And I think that night they pulled those ads. But, you know, and I don't know if, you know, that's the, if the bait and switch thing is a usual thing that used car salesmen do. I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, I managed to negotiate my car. You know, I took it down almost $3,000 on my sports car. So either, you know, either I must have gotten some newbie salesman, or, you know, I knew enough, you know, what to ask for and stuff like that, right? But wow, these guys just would not budge at all, at all. And if they, you know, I think the most they budged was like $300. Really? It's not even going to, like, take care of tax and licensing. Really? I mean, yeah, we were livid. And my friend called them up and complained the next morning. They pulled their ad. She made a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. Yeah. And then when I told you, Sifu Bob, about it, I think you said, yeah, you know, I wonder if it was because you guys are chicks walking in there. And, you know, I don't know. I'd hate to pull the gender card, but if that was the case, you know. And the other thing, you know, we've got about 7 minutes here. The other thing that really pissed me off is that we went to dinner. We said, well, you know what, we'll think about it, and we're going to go to dinner, think about it. We weren't even going to come back. But one of the managers called me because my friend didn't want to talk to these people. She was so livid. And he said, well, you know, the reason why we can't sell it for any less than 18 is because of the extended warranty. Well, the little piece of paper on the window said, as is, no warranty. But we were told by the first salesman, the young kid, that there was still about however many thousand miles left on the powertrain warranty. So we're good with that. We're good with that. So, you know, we don't want the extended warranty. And he explained why it was such a good thing and blah, blah, blah. And then he said, well, you know, and I said, well, it's my friend's money that we're playing with, so I'm not going to say yes to anything. And he said, get this, he said, well, you know, if your friend can't understand what I'm talking about, you're more than welcome to come in and I'll explain it to her and show her the paperwork. And I was like, excuse me? You know, why are you calling my friend stupid if she can't understand what I'm talking about it? You know, I'm like, you know what? Click. Screw you and your $19,000 car. You know, I was like, you know, and if it wasn't us that came in, it would have been somebody else coming in for that $16,000 price, because it's all over the internet. You know, what are they going to, you know, I guess they just would have kept trying until some sucker decided to not even bother negotiating. I was livid, you know. Do any of you guys know? I mean, is the bait and switch a usual thing?
I haven't seen a bait and switch done that way. I've seen them advertise a cheap car and try to upsell you to something else. But
yeah.
I think years ago I heard a story about, I don't know, Montgomery Ward or some big department store that had a misprint in their ad, and they were selling TV sets that were supposed to be $100, and they put a decimal point in, so they had a TV sets for $1.
Oh, God.
And they were actually held up by law that they had to sell those for $1. So, I mean,
oh,
I think
wow.
If you really pushed it, you probably would have got your $16,000. So.
Wow. That was crazy. Well, where has the time gone? We are out of time, believe it or not. Can you believe that?
No, I can't, because we have some great callers. We usually try to keep it to an hour and a half, and this time I went to a whole 2 hours, and we've got allotted for the show. It was great. We had an unbelievably good show. I hope you had fun, John.
I had a blast, guys. It was great.
Yeah, we're glad that you joined us. You're a blast to have on here. We'd like to, and you know what? I'd like to have you on as a regular interview guest one of these days.
Yeah,
if you're
great.
Up for it.
That'd be fine. Just say the word, I'll be here.
Okay, awesome. So we'll go ahead and put you on the list, and then we'll go from there. So, well, listeners, thanks for listening. There was no answer to our trivia question. But for those of you that want to give it a shot on the Facebook page, the question is, who was the only United States president to completely pay off the national debt and leave office with a surplus in the Treasury? We're going to go ahead and put that on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page, and then the first correct answer will get to win bragging rights and get to be a future guest host on one of our episodes. So we'd like to thank you, Sensei John, for joining us, and always thanking Sifu Bob. You're a great co-host. I always look forward to every week. So it'll be great. So me and Sifu Bob are still working on next week's guest, but if all goes well, it's going to be an incredible show with a great martial arts luminary. So we hope to see everybody next week. And next week is the 16th, correct? That's the third Sunday. So that will be our brunch Sunday show. So we won't be on at 6 p.m. We'll be on at 11 a.m. for our brunch Sunday show. So when we get our guests all confirmed and set up, we will make sure everyone knows via the announcement on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So thanks, everyone. We'll see you all next week. Have a great night, everybody. Goodbye.
You too. Bye.